We're doing our class on the Jewish home, and tonight we have to discuss differences that stem from our upbringing. And we all have things that are very serious and very important to us because of the homes we came from. And then we have things which make no difference to us because of the homes we came from. So in some homes, they don't think twice about letting a kid drink a full cup of alcohol at a Shabbos table. At other homes, you don't let a kid touch that. In some homes, they trust the kids with scissors. In other homes, they don't let a kid touch that. In some homes, they give every child china. In other homes, they don't let a kid touch that. In some homes, when someone's sleeping, you don't say a word on the whole floor. You're completely silent. And in other homes, people talk in the same room where someone's sleeping. In some homes, when you sit down for a meal, so they put the bread directly on the table. In other homes, you'd never put bread on the table. Bread goes on a plate. In some home, everyone picks from the salad bowl. And in other homes, you wouldn't touch a salad bowl that someone picked from. In some homes where they make kiddush, everyone drinks from a cup and passes it around, and it doesn't matter if they just sneezed or not. And in other homes, you would never drink from a cup someone else drank from. In some homes, when you have a guest come, so you give them linen that other people slept in, because why not? And in other homes, if you have a guest, you would never give a guest the linen you slept in. In some homes, everyone uses the same nail clipper. And in other homes, you would never use the same nail clipper as someone else. There are differences. There are differences, and I gave small examples. There are bigger examples. In some homes, when you finish with a match, you toss it into the garbage. In other homes, you first put it into the sink, dip it in water, and then put it in the garbage. In some homes, you don't bother recycling, and in other homes, it's criminal to put glass and plastic bottles into the regular garbage. There are things, and we have the values we come with, and they are so obvious to us that we think everyone behaves that way. I grew up in a home where you would never leave the Shabbos table without a white tablecloth, clean, and a challah board with challah, and a cover, and the salt shaker, and a cup on it. All Shabbos long, the Shabbos table has to look beautiful. Always set. You finish the meal, you clear the table, you set the table. If we ever went to sleep Friday night and we just cleared the table and did the dishes and put the food away, but did not set up the Shabbos table, our parents would look at us like, what's wrong with you? How did you leave the Shabbos table not looking nice? Where's your respect for Shabbos? So that was a given in our home. Other homes, they don't have such a concept. There are things that we take for granted that are obvious to us, but they're not obvious to the next person. And when you enter marriage, you suddenly discover that your spouse grew up in a barn. Well, guess what? She discovers the same thing about you. Only we have different status. We have different criterion for what's called a barn. In some homes, you shower every day. In other homes, you try to shower once a week if you make it. Mm. Okay, but when the two marry, I had a friend who got married, and he says to me, my wife tells me I have to shower every night. Do you believe that? He looks at me and says to me, can you believe that?
She's right.
I said, you know, life's tough, yeah? Look, the differences abound. The issue is that when we enter marriage, we're very surprised to see people who can actually live life this way. In some homes, women shave their legs and other body parts. In other homes, they never do such a thing.
Right.
So you can look at that and say, wait, what's wrong over here? Why? Isn't that part of being feminine? And she won't understand what you want from her. Some women leave their mustaches to grow. And you could say, wait, why wouldn't she take that off? But maybe the concept doesn't exist by her. Maybe she saw her mother and her grandmother this way. What about smoking? In some societies, part of being a man is smoking. In other societies, you don't come near a person when they're smoking. You would never date a person if they're smoking. Now, can you say one is right and one is wrong? You could always point a finger and say that's more right. The problem in marriage is when we approach it and say, this is right. You can't throw a match into the garbage without dipping it in water. And we're always self-indicated. So a friend of mine had, his wife would never clean the stovetop. So the stovetop was a puddle of oil. Now, you know what happens with oil when a fire hits some of the farfel that's in the oil, some of the other stuff that's in the oil? So then you have a little fire that's supported by the oil. And then if a person, God forbid, makes the mistake of pouring water on that, what happens is the fire shoots up. And people have burnt their whole faces off doing that. Because before you know what's going on, the fire shoots up and it's a fire that's almost uncontrollable. So first of all, you should never leave oil spills on your stovetop. Secondly, you should make sure your wife and children know that if there's a fire from oil, you don't put it out with water. That's very, very dangerous. But thirdly, what happens if you discover that your spouse leaves oil spills on the stovetop? What happens if you discover that your spouse comes from a house where they mock safety belts? So you could stand there lecturing about how safety belts are so important. Wait a second. We each have the norms we come from, and we can each point to things and say, that's not safe. How could you go to a bris milah and everyone's passing around the same cup and everyone's drinking from it? Do you know what percentage of the population has hepatitis B, hepatitis C, herpes? You could give a whole list of diseases. You go to a wedding and suddenly if she's from a certain culture, everyone's drinking from the same cup. And then they pass it to you. And you're like, oh, no thanks, right? But wait a second. Wait, we could always point to things and say that's super dangerous. Or we can say, okay, I married someone who has a different perspective. And we can talk about it. And slowly, we can evolve to the same place. We will always find differences. It doesn't matter if you grew up in the same town, you grew up the same dialect, she's Ashkenaz from Antwerp, and you're Ashkenaz from Antwerp, so, you know, you both went to the same day school, you had the same teachers, you grew up in the same community, the same society, you'll still discover differences. You try to marry someone who's most similar to you, but at the end of the day, once you enter home, you will discover differences. You come from a home where you never leave the room without making your bed. She comes from a home where it's my bed. What is my bedroom? What do I need to make it for? You come from a home where you fold your pajamas neatly and put them under the pillow. She comes from a home where you fling them wherever they land. It's my bedroom. It's my castle. I do what I want. You come from a home where before you leave the house, you check that all the lights are off. You check that you left the gas off. She comes from a home where every vacation, she asks you, did I turn the iron off? A friend of mine told me that every vacation, they're traveling a half hour and suddenly she says, I don't remember if I turned the iron off. I ironed your shirts just before we left for vacation and I don't remember if I shut the iron off. And every vacation he'd turn the car around and come back. He said to me, finally he got it. He said to me, by the time they were on their fifth vacation, his wife says, I don't know if I turned the iron off. And he says, honey, here it is. He said to me, he learned the trick. He brings it along to vacation. That way there's no question about it. Okay? So, by the way, I'm a Machon Meir graduate. This friend of mine is a Machon Meir graduate. He's older than me, but he's a Machon Meir graduate. So, we have to learn to live with the differences. Not every difference warrants in making an issue out of it. So we have differences. There's nothing terrible if you make your bed in the morning and she doesn't. So you want your kids to make their bed in the morning? Either they will or they won't. The fight that could ensue from it is much more destructive than having children who do not make their bed in the morning. What's the worst thing that'll happen? Either their spouse will teach them or they won't. One or the other. And there's nothing so terrible about you making your spouse's bed for her. So what? The Talmud actually says it's a sign of affection between couples that you make the bed for your spouse. That's why when a couple is prohibited, what was the family purity you wanted? Mm-hmm. Couples are not supposed to make the bed for one another when they're prohibited in the presence of one another. Meaning it's considered a sign of affection when you do it in front of your spouse. So when a couple is prohibited, they do not do it in the presence of one another. Same thing if you have a female guest, even if it's your cousin, you shouldn't make her bed in front of her. If she's in another room, you can make her bed. If she's in that room, then that's immodest. You shouldn't be doing it in front of her. Because this is a sign of affection when we make a bed for someone else. So we will discover differences. And they could be small and they could be big. It could be your wife comes from a family where they cut the salad really small. And you like the salad cut really big. She comes from a family where they spice everything with paprika. You come from a family where you never knew paprika existed. Suddenly everything has this orange flavor. And you ask her, what's that? She comes from a family where they squeeze out lemons over everything. You come from a family where the closest you got to lemon was that lemon-lime soda you every so often tasted. Never tasted lemon more than that. Okay, so these aren't critical things. We can always give a lecture. Do you know that they were called limeys because the limes they ate on the ship saved them from Lyme disease, saved them from all the diseases? Do you know how important it is to eat lemons? Well, you can make a case out of it. So what? You can make a case out of everything. It's not an issue of right and wrong. In marriage, we're trying to figure out how to make it work. So you can say, but of course I'm right. Children should always be seatbelted. Okay, I'm not saying you're wrong. But we don't have to make a fight out of it. The problem begins when you look at your spouse and say, she's a quack. And her family, they're quacks too. That's when you have a problem. A guy visited his, he goes to his in-laws, and they don't have locks on any doors, including the bathroom. So he calls me up, he says, they're crazy. They're crazy, no locks on any doors, including the bathroom. So I don't have privacy. In the middle of the night, people walk into my room. I don't have privacy in the bathroom. Crazy. What am I supposed to do? He says to me, I'm willing to bring a drill to their house. I'll install locks for them. See, the problem begins when he looks at them as crazy. Another couple goes to their in-laws, and their bedroom has a glass door. So they have zero privacy. He says to me, how am I supposed to get dressed in the morning? There's a glass door. I said, so you hang something over it. Find a solution. You know, take the mattress, stand it up against the door. Work it your way. There are other ways to work it. So, third guy tells me, I go to my in-laws, they don't have soap anywhere. No soap. No soap. How do they wash the dishes? I don't know. What are they doing to come in the bathroom? I don't know, but I'm supposed to eat that food. Okay. So now you can make the case, you know, hepatitis, and you could say everything. So, you make it work. Everyone finds issues. Finds issues in their spouse's home, finds issues in their spouse. There will always be issues. Doesn't matter who you marry, and the issues will always seem like crazy. Come on, I've seen normal people, but this, come on. Yeah, when you get married, you will discover your spouse is doing things that can seem crazy to you, if you're willing to look at it that way.
I came from a family where the opposites are very big. My father's Moroccan and my mom's aristocratic, so you can already imagine that.
Okay, you know, a woman calls me up and she says, I don't know what's wrong with my husband. He wears the same tie for Ma'ariv, Shachris, and Mincha. I come from a house where they change ties every time. You go to shul at the same time, three downings in a row. I don't know what's wrong with it. So in her perspective, that's normal. What he's doing is not normal. Okay. But is it so terrible if he gets used to her way of doing it? And is it so terrible if she gets used to his way of doing it? Is that a big deal? Saying, you know, each side could look at the other side and say, that makes no sense. But if our goal is to build a house, then we have to be open to things being different than what we're accustomed to. You will be surprised at how many of couples' issues revolve around this. I had a Russian friend who told me he has an issue. He does all the laundry in his house. Why? His wife doesn't know how to do laundry. Why? Because he made the biggest mistake. He let her buy the laundry machine when they got married, and within a month he threw it out. I said, what's wrong? He says, she bought one of those machines which you can't open the lid. It's a side open, and that means you could never open it and let it sit in the hot pins. He says, you can't do laundry that way. You have to buy a machine that you open on top, and then after all the laundry's in there and all the hot water's inside with the soap, you lift the top and you let it sit for a half hour in the hot water, and only then do you let the machine run. So now he's looking at me like, you know I'm right. Of course she's crazy. Of course I have to throw away that machine. I mean, she was going to give me clothing that were not clean. So of course, right? You guys think it's funny because it's not your issue. But when you'll get married, you'll see you'll have your issue. And when it'll be your things, it'll seem so obvious to you that you're right. Because I'm giving you a bunch of examples, but when you enter married life, you suddenly see, hey, wait a second. But she really does things weirdly. You have a woman who says, I don't do dishes till there are no dishes left. And from my perspective, if we eat cereal out of cups, and if we eat dishes on cereal on flat plates and drink the milk out of cups, we still have dishes, we're okay. So she has dishes piling in the sink, piling on the counter, and piling everywhere she can in the oven. And then one day she sits down and works for 3 hours and does all the dishes. That's her way of doing it. My husband comes from a house where you never leave a dish in the sink at night. You never leave it there. You know, if there's a dirty dish, you clean it. So now it's very easy to look at her and say that's not normal. You know how many germs we could have and viruses and bugs and diseases, and you could give a whole speech about it. Great. Being right and wrong is a non-issue in marriage. We're trying to figure out how to make it work. We're not figuring out who's in the right. We could always give our lectures and speeches about why we are correct. So the husband says, I have to take a haircut for 100 shekel. And the wife comes from a family where they buy one of these buzzer machines and 1, 2, 3, and in about 3 minutes, your haircut's done. And he makes this whole big to-do. He has to go get his $100 haircut every week. And she says, every week? You want to get a $100 haircut every week? And he looks at her like, you don't want me to look good in my job? I don't understand. I don't mind if you get a pedicure, a manicure, get your hair done every week. I didn't tell you not to. I can't take a haircut every week. Again, we discussed last week, there are areas where we have no business entering. There are areas where we have to respect that our spouse is different. And there are areas where if we're going to enter them, we can discuss them, provided that we are respectful. The problem begins when we look at our spouse, look at her or his family, and say, they're crazy. This is not normal. This is not the way to run a house. This is not the way to run a family. Then we have a problem. If we're willing to look respectfully and say, I do it this way, they do it that way, now let's see how we can make it work. If we can be accepting, if we can be respectful, then we might even be able to discuss it. And we might even be able to make headway. And it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard. So our story begins with, we'll give names to the couple. What names do you guys want to give?
Shlomo and David. Just kidding.
Shulamit and David, okay? So Shulamit and David are happily married and everything's great. And one night Shulamit tells David, go to sleep early. I got a test tomorrow. I have a series of tests coming up. You go to sleep early. I'm going to work on my exams. I'm going to work preparing for my tests. And David says, you sure? She says, yeah, I got a lot of work. I'm not going to sleep so fast. So David goes to sleep. And it's 1:30 in the morning. He's sleeping soundly. And she walks into the room and turns on the radio full blast. And he wakes up. And he's not sure if he should roll over and look at her or not look at her. And the radio's blaring and he's trying to be quiet. And he's thinking, can I fall back asleep? Doesn't he? Can't fall back asleep. So he gets up and she looks at him. And he looks at her and he's trying to figure out like, what went on here. She goes, I'm so sorry, that bothered you? And he's looking at her like, did that bother me? She goes, shh, go back to sleep, go back to sleep. She quickly shuts the radio. I'm so sorry, go back to sleep. She tiptoes out of the room and he lies down and he spends a half hour trying to figure out what just happened. What does that mean? So, okay, fine. He says, I'm not going to say anything. He's going to be a good husband. He's going to be quiet. Okay, another week or two. Again, she has an exam. David, go to sleep. It'll take me some time. Fine, he goes to sleep. He's asleep. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. Suddenly the radio is full blast. He's up. He's got a shock of his life. He's looking at the wall and he's thinking, what just happened? Oh boy. He hears the radio full blast. He's thinking about the poor neighbors. He's thinking about him for himself. He gets up and he looks at her and she looks at him and her eyes go real wide. And she looks at him, that woke you? And now he's already not like, huh? He looks like, what do you mean that wake me? She goes, shh. He looks at her and he goes, shh. But by now he's a little bit upset. So she turns down the radio and she tries tiptoeing out and he gives her this look like he's really upset. And she's hurt. And he tells her, why are you hurt exactly? And she says to him, you're right, I'm a terrible person, I'm so sorry. He says, I didn't say you're a terrible person, but why did you do that? She looks at him and says, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Go back to sleep. I'm really, really sorry. I'm really sorry. I didn't know that would wake you. He looks at her and says, you didn't know that would wake me. It woke up the neighbors. It woke up the whole building. What do you mean you didn't know that would wake me? So she's really hurt, and the tears start streaming down her cheek. And he looks at her and says, why are you crying? I should be crying. You woke me. What are you crying about? She says to him, you're right. I'm sorry. He says, you're sorry? What? You didn't know I'm here. She says, I didn't know you're there. He says, so what are you doing? She says, you're right. I'm sorry. I didn't know that would wake you. He says, what do you mean you didn't know that would wake me? He says, you know, I waited 5 seconds. You didn't turn the volume down. It's not like you turned it on. You were surprised the volume was up. You turned it up. You turned on the radio and then you turned the volume up. What do you mean you didn't know that would wake me? She says, you know, I'm really sorry. Go back to sleep. Please, I didn't mean to wake you. He looks at her and says, what do you mean? She says, that's what I'm telling you. I didn't know that would wake you. I'm really sorry. And now she's already really crying. He's looking at her and he doesn't understand. What are you crying about? You woke me. Why are you crying? She says, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to wake you. He doesn't know what she wants from his life. He goes back to sleep and he's lying to think, what does that mean? I didn't mean to wake you. You go to someone's room, you turn on the radio, you turn it on higher volume and say, I didn't mean to wake you. And he can't figure it out. And after a half hour, he goes out and she says, you're still up? I'm so sorry. He says, right, you're sorry. Yeah, I heard that. Okay. And she's really upset and he says, what do you mean you're upset? What are you upset? Then he tries to make himself a cup of tea and she says, why aren't you sleeping? He says, what do you mean why am I not sleeping? You turned on the radio. You turned up the volume. What do you mean why am I not sleeping? She says, I'm sorry. I really didn't know that would wake you. And he's like, stop saying that. I don't believe you.
Oh,
she says, I'm sorry. And now she walks away. And he says, don't you be hurt on me. You woke me here. I didn't hurt you here. She doesn't answer. And he's super frustrated. And now he's even more frustrated because now she's going to be upset tomorrow morning. You know. He doesn't know what to do with himself. So he tells her, look, you're upset. But I got nothing to say to you. You woke me. I didn't hurt you. And with that, he storms off into the room and tries to fall asleep, only to have a miserable night. And he tries talking to her, and he's getting nowhere, and she's getting nowhere. What's going on here? Only months later do they get to the bottom of it. And this is what happens in married life. When issues come up, it's very hard to know where the issue's coming from. And even when we talk the same language, we don't understand one another. At one point, they're talking, and they remember that when they were dating, she would talk to him and turn on the radio and talk at all hours, and he'd always ask her, you come from a family with a small house. You guys have 9 children in one room. How can you do this? And she would always tell him, sure, because you have 9 children in one room, no one wakes up from any noise. Because we always grew up where at all hours people were coming in and out and doing everything and talking on the phone, so everyone's used to sleeping with noise. The light goes on, the radio goes on. She grew up in a family where 9 children lived in one room, so everyone got used to sleeping with noise. She says to him, I didn't know that would wake you. She means it. He grew up in a family where he was an only child in a 3-floor house, about 9 or 10 rooms in the house. When someone would go to sleep, they wouldn't talk on that floor, let alone tiptoe on that floor. Everyone would just like, the house would be on silent mode for about 15 meters in the vicinity of that room. So in his mind, what does that mean? How can it be you didn't mean to wake me? So they're talking the same language. He says to him, I didn't mean to wake you. I didn't know that would wake you. But he doesn't begin to understand how she could say that. He says to her, what do you mean you didn't mean to wake me? So she answers him, I didn't know that would wake you. And he looks at her like she's coming from Mars. How could you not know that would wake me? You turn on the radio, turn it on full blast. How did you not know that would wake me? Because he comes from a house where that's so obvious. And you guys will encounter this again and again and again. The problem is that when it happens in marriage, we don't know where to put our finger on it. We're talking to one another and we don't understand one another. And no one means bad. But you understand, he reached a point where he already told her, I don't believe you, because he can't fathom how she could mean, I didn't mean to wake you, because he's coming from his perspective. Mm-hmm. So when we hit issues, we have to stop and say, okay, we're not understanding one another. And we have to be accepting of that. And it's very hard. This is one of the big hardships in marriage, because we're not always sure where it's coming from. I'll end with a quick story that happened to me and my wife. We were engaged, and we were looking at an apartment. We had closed on an apartment to move into, and we were discussing, they had a laundry room in that apartment, our first apartment, and we were discussing whether you could fit the washing machine and the dryer in the laundry room. So I went, and my wife said, you know, I measured it, and I thought it fits. Do you mind measuring it again? So I went with the measurements, and I called her up, and I said, I'm sorry, but there's no way it'll fit. So my wife says, that's strange. I was sure it could fit. Are you sure? I said, yeah, I measured it. My wife said, fine, I'll look again, but I thought we could fit it easily. My wife goes back, and she calls me up, and she says, I don't understand. There's a big space there. I just measured it again. It can fit. I said, look, could be I wasn't exact, but I thought we were short about 30 centimeters. So I'm not sure why I wasn't exact. You want, I'll go back and check again, because once the movers come, you know, it's one time, it's a one-shot deal. We better be ready for it to come in. Give me the measurements again. She gives me the measurements of the washing machine. She gives me the measurements of the dryer. I go back to the room. I measure again, and I say, look, I'm sorry, let's do the math together, because there's no way it'll fit. My wife says, you know, I'm on the run. But what do you mean there's no way it'll fit? Did you measure it? I said, sure, I measured it. And I came 30 centimeters short again. I don't know what, how you got this way. My wife says, what? No, no. We were, and I'm thinking there, okay, she must not be so good at math. I'm thinking like, something's wrong here. Right, you got it, right. I came from a house where the washing machine had its opening on top. And so the dryer had to be next to the washing machine. She came from a house where the washing machine had an opening on the side, and the dryer went on top of the washing machine. So when the dryer goes on top of the washing machine, it fits easily into the space. There was room for the washing machine and the dryer on top. I was measuring it widthwise, because to my mind it was obvious. That's how you put washing machines and dryers. That's how I grew up. She was measuring it heightwise, and it fit. She was right. But, you know, she knew which washing machine dryer she had ordered. I had no idea. We're talking, and again, back and forth and back and forth. And that was my first insight, that sometimes you could talk to someone, talk the same language, and still you're not connecting, because you're coming from a different perspective, and you don't even realize it. It was so obvious to me, I never saw it any other way. Washing machine and dryer, one next to the other. And she never saw it any other way. Washing machine and dryer, one on top of the other. Simple difference, right? And yet...
your perspective.
Yep.